Welcome to the T&D podcast brought to you by TomTom. We think you're trucking awesome. You deserve a trucking awesome app. That's why today we're excited to talk about the ultimate trucking companion, TomTom Go Navigation. With premium features designed to make every delivery a breeze, Go Navigation ensures you reach your destination efficiently and stress-free.
Hello, welcome once again to the Truck and Driver podcast with Matt Ireland once again. Today I'm sat with a good friend of mine, Frank, and we're just going to have a bit of a chat about his life in transport from around Suffolk. Frank, how are you, mate?
Yeah, all good, thank you. Yeah,
good.
All good. Enjoying this lovely summery weather.
Wonderful, isn't it?
Yeah.
Good old British summer. Yes, my coat is in the car, my trousers are back on once again.
There you go.
Yes. Can't get enough of it.
Yeah.
So we've known each other roughly, I don't know, maybe a decade or so?
Yeah,
give or take. Yeah. I mean, we've both sort of worked in the same sort of circles and similar sort of work, haven't we?
Yeah.
But your experience in transport goes back, obviously, a lot further than that. So
yeah, well, funnily enough, it's my 35th anniversary on Thursday of this week.
Yeah.
So I started my own business, doing sort of farming things in 1989, at the tender age of 30, and started. I've been working for agricultural merchants and that sort of thing, and had a little bit of a small holding, and then decided that I would risk doing something for myself.
Yep.
So I set myself up actually as a contract shepherd, which is a very glorious title, which just basically meant running around after sheep in the summer of 1989, getting rid of fly strike and that sort of thing. And then it morphed through sort of contacts and everything. I had an opportunity to do the pig haulage, breeding stock pig haulage, for a local company based in Suffolk.
Yeah.
Pig breeding company. And that sort of bounced me into the world of transport.
Right. So what were you driving?
I started off with Land Rovers.
Right, okay.
Yeah, so my first Land Rover, oh, it was ridiculous. That was a V8 Land Rover.
Petrol. Right.
Yeah, with an Arthur Williams trailer.
Yeah.
And I was getting 6 miles to the gallon that
way. So you probably would have been better running the truck.
Yes, yeah. So I did that for probably only about maybe 3 months.
Yeah.
And then bit the bullet and bought a brand new Land Rover.
Yeah. Diesel?
Yeah, diesel, yeah. Turbo diesel. That was the last of the turbo diesel Land Rovers before they went TDI in 1989 on a G plate.
Yeah.
And may it saved a fortune.
Yes, I can imagine. Paid for itself fairly quickly.
It did. So that was the start of it.
Yeah.
So, and got this work that I was, took me all over England, Scotland, Wales.
Right.
And the first Land Rover I kept for a year and a half, which is too long. So I did 148,000 miles in that in a year and a half.
Yeah.
But the Land Rover dealership had then been handed to Hammonds in that time. And I think Hammonds were quite keen to have my business.
I can imagine, yeah.
So I lost £1,000 on the price of that Land Rover.
That's not bad.
I bought it new for 10 grand
plus
that, and I sold it for 9 against a new K-Reg, which is the 200 TDI.
Yeah.
And then subsequently changed the Land Rover every year because I was doing like 90,000 miles a year.
So was it all just one-way traffic, or do you backload?
No, all one-way.
Yeah.
All one-way.
Just drop off, come straight back, go to the next one.
Yeah, so we had a sort of nucleus of, there's a lot of farms, I mean, this is the heyday of pig farming, so there's a lot of little breeding units in and around East Anglia, so I used to collect from them, and it might have been one bull, it might have been 12 gilts.
Yeah.
And then, anywhere in the country.
And so just for listeners who aren't aware of what a boar and a gilt is.
Sorry, yes.
That's right.
So a boar is a male pig.
Yep.
That you would use for breeding. And a gilt is a female pig that hasn't yet had piglets.
Yeah.
Once they've had piglets, then they then become a sow.
Sow, yeah.
So I did just the breeding stock. So it was young boars, typically sort of 6 months old.
Mm-hmm.
And gilts are a bit similar age.
Yeah. Fantastic.
So that was good. Saw some wonderful places.
Mm-hmm.
I used to go up to, in the end, I was going up to Scotland twice a month.
Yeah.
Only like a dozen pigs. which was good fun, and into Wales. Yeah, it was just
enjoyable.
Yeah, good times.
Yeah.
Good times.
Yeah.
And working with some super people. You know, the agricultural and sort of community was something, you know, very close knit then, because there's all these little farms.
Yeah.
So it was a nucleus of breeders, and then obviously quite small pig farmers, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah. Where everyone sort of knew each other and...
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's good times. And then the job morphed into... It was getting busier and busier, which is good. In that time, I actually bought a pig farm.
Right.
Near Beckles. And then bought a lorry, which is probably one of the worst things I did.
Says most hauliers, yeah.
Yeah. Well, for nothing else, I was then beholden to a tachograph.
Yes.
With the Land Rover, despite, you know, perhaps should have done, but I didn't have a tachograph.
Yeah.
So
what was the truck?
The truck, I bought a 13-ton Renault.
Yeah. It was a G plate. Yeah.
G188. ROD.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good old Rod.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that would have been I can't think of the name of the cab now.
Is it Midland?
Midland, that's the one. Yeah, Renault Midland.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it was a sleeper cab?
No, just day cab.
Yeah.
Which was a little bit limiting. But I fitted it, so it was a small cattle float, but yeah. I had a deck in it. I fitted it out with nipple drinkers and a water tank and that sort of thing. So by that time, legislation was coming in that you had to have, you know, sort of welfare of pigs.
Yeah.
Sort of the RSPCA running a scheme. So, yeah, that sort of did me. And then, to be honest, that kept me going. Plus my wife at the time had a Land Rover, so she would do trailer work and I'd do the lorry work.
Yeah.
And it kept us really busy.
Right. So is it still just... England, Scotland, Wales.
Yeah, I was going, but also doing occasional little soirees into Europe.
Lovely, yeah.
So I did Holland and Germany.
Yeah.
Went over to the far side, I can't remember where it was. It was far side of Germany, over the other side of the wall.
Yeah.
And that would have been in 1990, 1991, I suppose, when the wall had just come down.
So just after Germany had become reunified.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that was really interesting.
Must have been quite an eye-opening experience.
Yeah. And, yeah, used to... sleep in the back of this 90 curled up in a ball. But I used to take, it was always, I think it was always just boars I used to take over to Europe.
Yeah.
And it would be one boar or two boars and that sort of thing.
Wow.
Because there was another company that used to do all the bulk numbers of breeding stock gilts.
Yeah.
On an Arctic. So that was good. The only downside was having to go across on the ferry, because I'm not a very good sea traveler.
Rugged sailor.
Oh, man, dreadful.
So did you go Dover Calais? Or did
In fact, the first time I went over was from, that was on North Sea ferries from Ipswich.
Right, yeah.
Back in the olden days.
West Bank.
Yes, it would have been. Yeah. And frying the shit out of me.
Yeah.
Climbing up that wire bloody rope stairway up the side of the ship. but that was one experience.
Yeah.
One experience. That was about, I think it was two pigs that I took over.
Right.
And I'd never been on a boat before.
Yeah.
So that was good.
That's when you realised that you weren't a sailor.
That's right, yeah. That wasn't so bad, but we did, I went over from Harwich. I always used to go to Europort.
Yeah.
I went from Harwich one night and there'd been a real bad storm. And I'd actually taken a mate of mine with me for a little ride out.
Mm-hmm.
It was only like about four boards we had to take the other side of Holland. And, really bad storm. The boat was, it was a P&O liner that came that we were travelling on. And that had been delayed, and I think there'd been some containers gone over the side of the ship. And it was all dreadful. Anyway, we got on there, had a bit of weight, so I went to the bar, and foolishly I had 4 pints of Newcastle Brown.
Yeah.
And then went to bed.
Yeah.
And then we set sail. And then I was in the shower throwing my heart up for whatever it was, about 11 hours.
Yeah.
It was dreadful.
Were you saying never again?
Yeah, I think I did a couple of trips after that. But so obviously I was travelling then across to, and my mate slept through the whole thing. And we then travelled and got rid of these pigs, and I was dreading the journey home. But it was like a mill pond.
Yeah.
So it's just the way it goes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Yes. So that's good. That's good.
Yeah.
And then by the sort of early 2000s, I suppose, the pig job really sort of took a dive. People being paid, pig farmers were being paid to depopulate. As we did, actually. It was the outgoers scheme, so you were paid to get out of pigs.
Right.
Destroy all the equipment.
Yeah.
So it couldn't be used again. Which, you know, in hindsight, was a dreadful thing to do.
Yeah.
For me, it meant that I could then go into bulk haulage.
Right.
So I knocked the pig haulage on the head.
Yeah.
Bought a 7-year-old Volvo FH.
Yeah.
FH12.
Arctic.
Yeah. Bought a second-hand unit. And which is a lovely thing.
Bit of version one, I presume, at that.
Yeah, three-speed box, just a fantastic truck.
Yeah.
And I bought a brand new SAS trailer.
Right.
So the SAS trailer then was £33,000.
Right.
And then set about driving for various people, so quite big companies, just subbing to them.
Yeah. UK, European?
Yeah, no, just UK.
Just UK,
yeah. And, yeah, had some good times. It was never as lucrative as running around with a Land Rover with no taco.
Yes. Yeah, very true. Yeah, the bigger the vehicle,
It was good. And then after a year, maybe 2 years, well, basically in 2003, I bought a brand new DAF CF.
Right.
And that was a 480. At the time when I ordered it, they literally then announced that they were doing a version with a little wheel.
Yeah.
But at the time, it was only going to be a 430.
Right.
For some reason. So I ordered it on Christmas Eve 2002, a chassis cab. It cost me £58,000. And I decided to go for the big wheel and a 530.
480,
rather.
Yeah.
480.
Yeah.
And that served me well.
Yeah.
Served me well until 2005, and then at which point my marriage went down the pan, everything changed.
Yeah,
the lorry went, and it was actually the best thing that ever happened.
Fair enough. Just incidentally, how did you find the stash trailer?
The first one I had was the Mike Beer. I think he designed it, but it was certainly one of his sort of off the shelf ones,
right,
that I got from Newton Trailers.
Yeah,
so that was a. It didn't have the sloping front. It was square front and back, and it had barn doors at the back, or a universal door at the back, so barn doors and tipping.
Yeah.
Subsequently, it was very long and very heavy.
Right.
And was, from memory, might have just about been a 65-yarder.
Right.
So it wasn't that big.
Yeah.
And I changed that. I had to put the lifting axle, I changed to, so it was on the rear, so I'd get on weighbridges.
Yeah.
We were going down in the West Country quite a lot then, and wouldn't fit on the weighbridges.
Right.
So I had to, to bugger about doing that. And then I traded that for a new 65-yard Stas.
Mm-hmm.
Again, not with a sloping front, just the basic Stas, obviously manual sheet and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Ordinary tipping tailgate.
Yeah.
And, that was a nice thing.
Yeah.
Quite a bit shorter, a bit lighter.
Because they seem to have a bit of an issue reliability-wise. There seem to be quite a lot of people had issues with Stas, as I seem to remember at the time. I don't know whether it was more to do with the automated tailgate or not.
I don't know. The only thing that there used to be concerns about was the chassis.
Yeah, because they're quite lightweight.
They were very light. They were alley. And they used to, it looked all wrong when they were going up. You know, the chassis had been like a bloody banana.
Yeah.
But I never had any issues.
Yeah.
And I wasn't aware. At the time, people like Roger Warnes, they had a whole bloody fleet of them.
Yeah. I think they still do.
They were sort of the first ones to have any sort of quantity of them. And there was a lot of other trailers around at the time. I can't remember, United Trailers. There's quite a few, a lot cheaper than the Stas.
Yeah.
But they weren't built as well.
Right.
Weren't built as
well. So you found them pretty well built.
Yeah,
reliable.
Fantastic. Yeah. And held the money.
Yeah.
More the point.
Which is even better.
Yeah.
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 Excellent.
Yeah. So I ended up working. I was in the last probably 18 months, maybe 2 years, I was actually subbing to Stennett's.
Yeah.
At Ingham.
Yeah.
And had some good work with them.
Yeah.
And actually ended up in their transport office.
Oh, right, okay.
When things went belly up, sort of, with my family life.
Yeah.
So that was good. And it gave, it was okay, but office life isn't for me. So no. I stuck up for 3 months.
That was enough.
Yeah.
Enough of being inside.
Yeah, definitely. But good times.
Yeah.
Good times.
So what happened after?
After that,
once you got back outside again, so to speak.
Back outside, I decided that I'd had enough of driving lorries.
Yeah.
And went into the sort of green waste
mm-hmm.
industry, which served me well. Really, actually, from 2006 up until 2015.
Right.
So it's quite some time.
Quite a chunk.
Still involved with transport. I was transport manager for a company on a couple, two or three occasions, or two or three different companies, should we say.
Yeah.
They were, again, good times, interesting times. Yeah.
Did you miss the driving at the time?
No.
No?
No.
Weren't bothered?
Not at all.
Not at all.
Found I'd never get back in a lorry.
Yeah.
And then look what
that panned out well then.
So I was, so after various events, got back into driving lorries in 2015.
Yeah.
9 years ago.
Yeah.
And
back on bulk, wasn't it?
Yeah, bulk. So I'd done bulk, walking floor, dirty water tankers.
Yeah.
That's about it, really.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So a nice variety, all farm.
All agricultural based, isn't it? Yeah, because being is where we are.
Exactly.
Our factories, our farms, as I've said before on podcasts,
it's been good, interesting work.
Yeah.
Interesting work.
Yeah, variety of trucks and trailers and.
Yeah, people. Seem to be a lot of Renault premiums.
Yeah, Renault, I've mentioned it before as well. Renault are very popular around here, I think purely because. We've got Roy Humphreys on the A140, although he's independent, he sells an awful lot. Norfolk Trucks.
Exactly.
There just seems to be several Renault dealers all in close proximity, don't they? And they're cheap, or cheaper than other trucks.
Absolutely, and an ideal farm truck.
Yeah.
I've always said, people sort of look down their nose a little bit to me when I bought the CF, but I always felt an XF was just too big. Mm-hmm. I was going in and out of Wales and, all over the place. And I just felt an XF was just too big.
And they're a bit heavier as well, aren't they?
The
XF, So when you're paid by the ton, it all makes a difference, doesn't it?
That's Although in hindsight, now I've been driving, if you like, full width lorries.
Yeah.
Then it's not really an issue.
Not great, but it's just, I suppose, the weight, what you win and lose on the weight.
It's another probably half a ton at least.
Yeah.
You know?
And that can make a big difference over a week, can't it? Realistically.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, so
definitely.
As nice as an XF is, a CF, depending on how much time away you're doing one, it's not too bad a place to be.
I was away all week.
Yeah.
Which I didn't really enjoy, but it's the only way to
make money.
Make it pay.
Yeah.
Simple as that.
Yeah.
But it was okay. But then, I just remembered, it caught fire.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah. I was pulling a taut liner.
Yeah.
Which was all fine and dandy, the gap between the front of the trailer and me was fine. But I turned up a little road near Newmarket, actually, and it was on a hill and quite a tight turn,
mm-hmm.
which caused, unbeknownst to me at the time, but it caused the nose of the chassis on the tour liner.
Yeah.
Hit the back of the battery box. I had battery boxes put across the back of the cab to accommodate the tipping gear.
Yes.
Caught those and basically caused the batteries to short out.
Ah.
So I got about probably half a mile up the road, glanced in the mirror, saw white smoke. I thought, shit.
Oh.
Stopped. And those flames going up the back of the cab. Managed to get the lorry away from the trailer. I had empty potato boxes on.
Yeah.
Managed to get the truck away from the trailer and away from some overhead electric lines, I think it were, and literally just got out of the truck, and then all the airlines went, just lots of hissing and popping and farting.
Yeah.
And I'll be honest, the worst thing I ever did was call the fire brigade.
Should let it burn.
Yeah,
yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Because they were out within minutes.
Right.
The old bill turned up, and they weren't really interested.
Yeah.
Although they did think it was quite funny. The only thing I saved out of the truck was my briefcase and a crate of Stella.
which came back to cash first.
It was probably the Stella.
Yeah.
Might get it warm.
Yeah.
Um, But so the fire brigade came out and he said, "Is that a sunroof?" I said, "Yeah, but it's electric." Well, obviously all electric. So bash, an axe went through that.
Yeah.
And they just filled the cab with water.
Right.
And then on the back of the cab, they said, "Oh, we think the insulation is still smouldering."
Yeah.
So they cut the back of the cab open to expose this sort of smouldering horsehair or whatever it is. and then Manchester came along, dragged it away.
Yeah.
And the bastards wouldn't write it off.
Really?
No, wouldn't write it off.
Well, they wouldn't put a new cab on it?
No, nothing. What? So the cost, I think it was something like 17 grand
yeah.
to repair it. And the insurance company wouldn't even renew the seats. I had to get the seats validated. God. And they never did smell anything but smoke.
Yeah. Unreal.
Yeah, that was dreadful.
I can imagine, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's embarrassing. So, yeah. Worth the wise, don't call the fire brigade.
If your truck's on fire, give it a few
minutes.
Make sure it's properly lit.
<That's right.
laughs> But it must have been quite a scary thing as well, I suppose, at the time. It's your own truck.
Yeah, it's on fire, you just think, it's just,
another
thing.
Yeah. So what did you just get a rental?
I got a rental. There's a guy, I don't know if he's still going, he's a guy up the A140 up near Pullen Mark off the left of Timmershaw, I suppose. And I rented an FH off him, funnily enough, for quite a few months.
Yeah.
So that worked.
Yeah.
That's worked. You know, my insurance covered the rental of it. I remember it was quite a reasonable rent anyway. And then did bits and bobs and then came out of the lorry. Well, basically, I think I had the lorry back for maybe not even a month.
Yeah.
And then had the opportunity to rent it out.
Yeah.
Which did. And then sold it in early 2006.
Yeah, I suppose that went onto a boat and off into the sunshine.
No, it went local, actually.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. But
so some poor sod got him for.
What's that smell?
He's a heavy smoker.
Yeah, so there we are.
Yeah.
So that was the last lorry I owned, which seems a lot. Well, it was a long time ago now.
Yeah.
21 years ago.
Yeah.
Blimey.
Yeah.
You know? So... yeah, lorries.
Yeah, pain in the backside.
And yes.
You're listening to the Truck and Driver podcast brought to you by TomTom. The TomTom Go navigation offers a specific set of truck features. You can set your cargo and truck dimensions for specific routes so you can drive confidently on suitable roads, making every journey efficient and reliable. Truck, yeah.
And so since then, you've just been an employed driver as such.
Yeah, running my own, as either self-employed or a limited company, doing, anything and everything.
Yeah.
Predominantly for sort of, a couple of companies.
Yeah.
But it's kept me busy. It's kept me doing what I want to do.
Yeah.
So, and then, so 2 years ago, I had the opportunity to get my arse out of East Anglia.
Yeah. Why would you want to do that?
How long have you got?
As we glance out the window at the somewhat damp ground in June.
So I had the opportunity to go to Bali, Indonesia, which I did about 18 months ago.
Yeah.
Which has been, a wonderful experience.
Yeah.
It's continuing to be.
Excellent.
Although I came back, I'm not quite old enough to retire.
Yeah.
And I came back last year for a few months to do a bit of work, and came back this year to do a bit of work.
Yeah.
But
just top the bank.
Yeah, just sort of keep things bubbling along.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, I had quite a catastrophic incident.
Yeah.
Within a week of me being back in England, actually.
Yeah.
Where a dirty water vacuum tanker gave way, shall we say.
Right.
It burst one of its covers and left me quite badly injured.
Right. So can I ask what happened? Or?
Yeah, in broad terms, loading the lorry, and for whatever reason that we still haven't got to the bottom of this. This is only a few weeks ago, but the an inspection cover on the back of the vacuum tanker gave way.
Right.
So it followed by about 25, 26 tons of liquid very nasty liquid.
Yeah.
All the sort of washings from abattoirs and that sort of thing.
Not the type of stuff you want to make your teeth.
All delightful stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I ended up with, well, if you want a list, fractured skull, fractured sternum, fractured spine, bleed on the brain, cuts and bruises.
Bloody hell.
Yeah. I'm lucky to be here, Matt. I'm really lucky to be here.
You are.
Yeah.
What went through your mind when...
At the risk of getting emotional, because it's still very raw.
I'm not surprised.
I honestly, because I've got a wife in Indonesia, and my son, my 22-year-old son lives there.
Yeah.
He's been out for quite some time, and I've got a little 8-year-old stepson, and I just, the only thing where I was, fuck, I'm not going to see these people anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Just...
I was a very, very lucky chap.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it doesn't really bear thinking about. I mean, I said to you, one of the sawmills that I go to in the last month or so, a chap was killed there. He was killed in an industrial accident, which they can't talk about as such, and it was about the same time as this happened.
Yep.
And it always, until it happens to somebody you really know or are close to, it's always happens to somebody else, in air quotes. It's you read about it, and you'll see it. It's like if a disaster happens on the telly, you'll see it and think, oh, that's really terrible and whatnot. Mm-hmm. But until it actually kind of hits home as such, you don't realise just how serious these things are, because you've come over here to do some work, just top your bank up.
Yep.
You managed, what, 5 days
four
work?
Days.
4 days work.
Four and a bit, yeah.
And this was nearly 2 months ago now.
Yes. Yeah.
So you've been sat about as such.
Yeah.
Unable to work.
Yeah.
In pain.
Yeah.
Lucky to be alive, really.
Yeah.
There's no two ways about it, is there? Because to have a fractured spine, skull, sternum.
Yeah.
Isn't going to be a barrel of fun, is it?
No.
Let's be honest.
No.
And it just, it doesn't bear thinking about, and it just really brings home why we've got health and safety in the first place. I mean, there's so many arguments to, you know, for and against PPE. Now, from what I gather with yours, I don't think any amount of PPE really would have helped, to be honest.
I don't think so. I think, I mean, the force was so much or such that it blew me out of one of my boots.
Yeah.
And sent me at least 5 metres.
Yeah. That's an incredible force.
Tsunami. So I don't
think, tsunami.
That's right, yeah. So I don't think a hard hat. I mean, yeah, I ended up with two really bad lacerations to my head.
Yeah.
But I think a hard hat would have flown off anyway.
Yeah.
You know, we don't have chin straps on hard hats.
No.
Well, there are sometimes, but you don't wear them because you look so bloody stupid.
Yes. Yeah. That's it. That's exactly it. And I think that's what a lot of it comes down to with people.
It's vanity.
It's a vanity thing, isn't it? And they'll argue the case about why they shouldn't wear this and so on.
Yeah.
And sometimes, yes, it is ridiculous, but sometimes it's there for a reason, and unfortunately a lot of it comes from people getting hurt or worse.
Exactly.
Is why things get, you know, reviewed and changed. It's like several years ago I did my Institute of Advanced Motorists motorbike test, because I've done car, bike and truck. And as the chap was saying, you know, the tests and the procedures that they follow have all been worked out from statistics, from accidents of people who've not made it on bikes.
Exactly.
And statistically, if you do your IAM bike test, you're, I think, 80% less likely to be involved in a crash,
right,
because of what they've learned from less fortunate people.
Yes. Yeah.
And again, I did my formerly called an Epic card, I think MPQ card, I think it's called now. Mm-hmm. Which allows you into certain quarries. Ones they are, it might be like Breeden's Tarmacs, a few of them, whoever. I know I teach stuff, but I've always been of the ilk of, if you can go on a course and learn something, it's well worth doing, especially when it comes to CPC. Rather than sitting there getting bored, pick something that's relevant or useful, and you might learn something. And it came up, so I think certainly Breeden's, I presume most of the quarry companies now have decided to go for orange high-vis. And so I thought, well, that's quite interesting.
Oh, right.
Yeah. Now, so I thought, well, what's the reason behind it? It can't just be because us truck drivers look a bit better in orange than yellow.
Yeah.
There must be some sort of reason behind it. So I asked the chap, and it stems from the railways, apparently, and because in certain light levels, yellow high vis they found with train drivers, if they had workers on the track, mm-hmm. in certain light situations, they couldn't see them in yellow, but they could be seen in orange.
That's interesting.
So it come. Yeah. So it's not just because they want to be a pain in the backside and make you buy more PPE.
Sure.
It's been thought about, and there's mm-hmm. logic and reason to it. And it's as frustrating as it seems sometimes. You know, if you go somewhere new, you've just got to think, right, well, there's reason for this. Sometimes it is really frustrating because they just implement just the most rudimentary rules that yeah. another site of theirs have got. They haven't thought about it. And we've also all been there. Like, one of the places I go quite regular, the footways, as pedestrians, have got to take a covered in timber. Right. So you've got to walk in the yard because yeah. you can't, you can't, unless I put a harness on and manage to mountaineer over to the top of this timber, I've got to move out. Yeah. So it also begs the question, well, who's in charge of health and safety?
Is Absolutely. That's a fundamental, you know, to keep walkways clear.
Yeah.
In the workway, workspace. Absolutely. And if anything went wrong, you know, if you had to divert away from a footway and then got run over by a forklift,
yeah.
then it'd be serious shit on the company.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
Really would.
And
very painful for you.
It would, yeah. But also, would it come back on me as not reporting it?
Mm-hmm.
But then is it my job to report? Because everyone's going to be aware of it, realistically.
Well, so I think in the scheme of things, we're all responsible. If you look at the health and safety, whatever it is, sort of manifesto or whatever, you know, we are all responsible for our own health and safety,
yes.
and that of the people
around us. Yeah.
So it would be incumbent on you, or me, or whoever, if you saw something, you know, a hazard,
mm-hmm.
it would be incumbent upon us to report it.
Yeah.
You know, it might not go down very well with the company.
No.
And they might ban you.
Yeah. So at least you've done your bit, haven't you? As simple as that. And it's just the big takeaway from what's happened to you is just you've really got to just try and look after number one, first and foremost, you know, and obviously, I mean, you were fortunate that you had a work colleague there.
Very much so, very much so. He dragged me out of the way.
Yeah.
I think, without being too dramatic, you know, over-dramatic, I think I could have drowned.
Yeah.
Because it sent me flying, which point I guess it's where I bust my back. I couldn't move, and there was this tsunami,
yeah,
this torrent of shite come towards me,
yeah,
and I was laying on the ground,
yeah,
you know, so yeah, go figure.
And also the fact that he's reacted to it and not been scared about moving you as well, because another thing as well that comes up an awful lot when we're teaching first aid and things like that, people are so afraid that they're going to get sued. Now,
yes.
In this country, in Europe, we have good Samaritan laws.
Yeah.
So as long as you're doing your best with the skills and the knowledge that you've got, you cannot be prosecuted.
That's right.
If he started to try and do open heart surgery on you with some sort of Stanley knife he's got in his pocket, then yes, you could sue him after the effect.
Yeah.
But we are not in America.
No.
Where you have to ask permission for absolutely everything. If and it still amazes me that people I know refuse to do a first aid course because they don't want to get sued.
Really?
Honestly. And I've said to them, so you don't want to do a first aid course that could potentially save your wife or family's lives through simple basic first aid because you're worried that they're going to sue you.
Mm. Funny enough, we covered it because I did this. I've been using my time to do my 5 CPC modules.
Yeah.
You know, on Zoom. And I did the first aid one. I think that's the first one I did.
Yeah.
And, spoke specifically about the Good Samaritan, this sort of scheme whereby you can't, you know, if you've done your best, then you can't get sued if things go wrong and that sort of thing.
No.
And I have to say, my work colleague was brilliant. You know, he has done first aid because he's involved with football coaching and that sort of thing. So he's obviously had to have some sort of qualification for that.
Yeah.
So he knew what to do.
Yeah.
And, you know, he kept me conscious. I was drifting in and out, and he was, you know, he was there, man. He was, you know, forever grateful.
Yeah.
Really.
And again, it's not because I teach it, but I just think first aid is such an important course. I think that if as and when they change the law on CPC, it should be mandatory to do driver's hours and tachographs, because truck drivers deal with them all the time, and the amount of people that get it wrong is unbelievable. It's probably believable, actually, to be fair. But also first aid, just... there's plenty of people who are terrified of blood. You don't have to get involved with blood. Even if you've done a first aid course and you're mildly confident about it, even just not panicking and just phoning 999 could be the difference.
Absolutely, it really could.
And if it was mandatory over time, and I think it should be part of the car test as well, they should have to do a very basic first aid course. So there's going to be crashes on the road. We can't get around that. There's terrible drivers out there. That's the way the world is. If every single driver on the road is first aid trained, so many lives could be saved so quickly. It would be, you know, just having truck drivers as first aiders isn't, in my opinion, enough. It should be car drivers as well.
Yeah, like you say, I think that the it's about not panicking. It's about knowing that just the, I mean, it sounds simple, dial 999. But perhaps in the heat of the moment, in the panic, you don't think. This guy who I was working with knew exactly what to do. You know, he couldn't put me in a recovery position because of the state of my back and all that sort of thing. But I was, I can't remember how I was now, I was sort of leaning up, but leaning against him. You know, so he was supporting me. And he phoned the ambulance, he guided the ambulance in, you know, we then had to get the air ambulance and da-da-da-da-da, you know. And he was brilliant. He was brilliant. So, yeah, very, very worthwhile. And any sort of training, I think, you're right to say, with CPC in particular, you know, I think we all see it as this sort of, you know, pain in the backside. Oh, it's just, you know, money for nothing, blah, blah, blah. But
I suppose the biggest problem is when it first came out, you could do the same module five times. And it's just, it made a complete mockery of it. And it just made it look so obvious that it's just about money and not actually teaching people stuff. Whereas now they've changed it slightly. It is better. And, you know, and like dear old Bob Carr, he always said to me, like when he joined the army, he'd volunteer for everything. Any course going, he'd volunteer for. And it took him around the world. If he hadn't have volunteered for stuff, he'd never have gone to Christmas Island.
That's interesting.
You know, he was sent out there because he'd volunteered to do a course on Caterpillar engines. And they needed an engineer out in Christmas Island, so he was the one who got sent out there. And he ended up going around the world, paid for by the army, because he kept volunteering for different courses. And it just set him up so well for the rest of his life, because he just knew how to take anything mechanical or apart, put it back together, to deal with things. You know, rather than just saying, oh, I'm not doing that, I'm not doing that. You just... you know, had to do his national service, and he just made the most of it.
I mean, I will say, I've been on, I was quite delighted, actually. I did a block booking with a firm called, I think it's CPC Driver for You or something like that. Based down in Barry in South Wales, father and daughter. Very reasonable, 169 quid for five modules, including all the uploads, everything. And I think that's really good. And, you know, very engaging. It's been, I found it really interesting.
Because it's, I was asked as well if I would do some teaching via Zoom, and I personally said no, because I think it would be difficult to keep, not only keep everyone engaged, but make sure that they're all being attentive at all times. And
I think that is the downfall, or the pitfall, should we say, is that it's become apparent on, I've done four, there is a core of people who like to just, you know, let's, you know, get involved. It makes the 7 hours go quicker, if nothing else. And also, you know, it makes life easier for the tutor. You know, but there has been, there's always going to be people who will, little wallflowers, will sort of sit back and everybody else do the work. It's just human nature, I suppose. But no, I've thoroughly enjoyed it. Really have. Which I never thought I'd say about a CPC course.
No. Especially as well as somebody who was involved in haulage long before it came along. You know, if you're a newcomer now, it's just you didn't know how it was before.
No, you just liked it, didn't you?
And also when it first came in, what it was like. I mean, I still remember the first day's CPC we went on. With that was RTT trainer, long since gone bust. And the chap who we were doing, it was something like load security, and we were also doing like ADR awareness, because because I kept saying to Trans Am, you know, although we're not doing ADR, people are involved with like bits of pyro, catering of gas balls, things like that, and nobody has any sort of training at all. They should, although they don't need an ADR certificate, you need to have people know roughly, because also you should be declaring some of this stuff a shipment, and nobody is, and the fines are huge if you're if you're breaking that law unintentionally. You need people to know roughly what they're doing. So anyway, they arrange this course, and I always remember this chap was trying to show us how to operate a ratchet strap,
right?
And he couldn't thread it, and he kept farting about it. And in the end, my mate Rob Cole got up, took it out of his hands, threaded it, showed him, put it down, sat back down. And this guy just turned around and went, well, I don't know, we just deal with containers who I work for, so I've got no idea. And you just think, so you're being paid to teach us how to do our job, and you've got no idea.
Yeah. And which is a fundamental thing, isn't it?
Yes.
Not only in haulage, but it's every line of work.
Exactly.
Yeah.
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 And so when you've got people like that, that's going to put everyone on the back foot straight away. It certainly did with me, you know, and I just thought, well, what a waste of time a CPC is. And
great.
And I think from that point on, I just thought, right, well, I'm going to do my ADR because at least I'll get something out of it. And it's people who are going to be talking about something that they know what they're on about, sort of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And it could help in the future with getting some work in between tours, sort of thing.
Yeah.
And although I've never lost work from not having it, and you never get any more money for having it, it's just a useful thing to have. And
and
I've used it since.
Yeah. Well, it's a changing world, isn't it? You know,
yes.
And I think if you can stay ahead of the curve, and with as much training and knowledge. But I mean, that brings us back to, you know, training on specific lorries, specific types of vehicle.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know about you, Matt, but I've learned as I've gone along, literally by my mistakes.
Yeah.
Mostly.
Pretty much, yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Hopefully not too expensive mistakes as well. Because again, like with the tanks, as far as I'm aware, there's not an actual official, like, certified training scheme to say that you're competent.
So I think it's the same with all these. You know, if it's a big company, well, it doesn't matter the size of the company. What they should have is some system in place or procedure where, you know, any employee or contractor or whoever's doing the work has to be assessed in the first instance, and then if the assessment, you know, dictates that, well, actually you don't know what you're doing, then go for full training.
Yeah.
But that would always, I guess, be with an established driver, whatever, within that company.
Yeah.
You know, who would be giving you the benefit of their own experience.
Yeah.
But that again isn't qualified as such.
No.
You know, it's all, I know perhaps we're getting into the realms of, well, you know, it's more legislation and all that sort of thing. But I think in the case of my recent thing, you know, I've never been trained on vacuum tankers.
No.
You know, you open that button and see what happens.
Push that, do that.
Yeah.
And that away you go.
Yeah.
And without knowing of the potential consequences of what's happened.
I mean, as it is, that isn't what the reason it burst, I don't think, but but just fundamental knowing your way around, especially, you know, mechanical stuff, air-driven stuff, hydraulic stuff, you know.
But even like me and you have done bulk tippers for God knows how long.
Yeah, yeah.
No official training, just, I mean, I've just went with a bloke for the first week, I think, with my own tipper, but just went with them, shadowed them. They showed me roughly what to do. It was like, try not to tip on uneven ground.
That's right.
Which is all well and good, but when you're then let out on your own and you go to a farm and it's uneven, especially as a new person, you're like, well, and the farmer says, well, they've tipped there before and there is a pile of something.
Yes.
You think, well, surely it's going to be all right. And
I know.
And that's,
We fly by the seat of our pants a lot of the time. We really do.
Yeah.
Especially with tippers.
Yes.
Especially with tippers.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. It might be a fantastical thing to say, but I always said, actually, years ago, well, you know, when I was doing bulk myself, that there must come a time where they ban tipping trailers.
Possibly.
I mean, it's going to be very difficult to do.
It would, yeah.
But there are, you know, there are
alternatives.
Yeah, a lot of the aggregate lorries now got a belt in the bottom.
Yeah, they've got the hoppers that feed out the back.
There's no reason you couldn't do that with grain, perhaps.
Walking floors, or floors like that, yeah.
I mean, I love walking floors. I think they're the most versatile, brilliant bit of kit.
Yeah.
If they're working properly.
Yeah.
But, yeah, what a bit of kit.
Yeah.
They're great.
Yeah, very effective. And, yeah, multitude of cargo.
Completely.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, self-load, off-load, whatever.
Yeah.
Nice.
And again, they don't tip up, so you're eliminating that danger. Yeah.
The only thing I've always felt, and I've done quite a lot of walking floor work over the past probably 5 or 6 years, invariably with manual sheets. And it's always surprised me that, you know, if you go to, I don't know, most places now, that if you've got an ordinary bulk tipper,
yeah,
and you've still got a manual sheet, then you have to operate that from the ground.
Yes.
You know, you can't get up on a catwalk.
No.
Yet on a walking floor, you can be 15 foot up in the air,
yeah,
leaning out to put a handle in,
yeah,
the, you know, in the socket at the end of the sheet
pole, yeah, to wind your sheet.
To wind it over.
Yeah.
And it's just...
That's acceptable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's mad.
Yeah.
It's mad. It
doesn't make any sense.
But I can see why people still keep manual sheets on walking floors, because, you know, a lot of time you, you know, invariably rubbish and waste and that sort of thing. And these guys on these 360s, they really don't care.
No.
They just ram the stuff in. So yeah, invariably, you know, if you've got lovely expensive pumps and equipment on top doing an electric sheet,
yeah,
then
it's going to get knocked about.
Exactly. Yeah. So you can see why people,
yeah,
still.
And I suppose there's going to be a weight-saving advantage as well. Not massively.
Not massive.
Not massively.
But it's, you know, it all adds up, I
it
suppose.
It does, depending on how, you know, how you're looking at,
yeah,
it.
Yeah,
yeah.
But, yes, that's always been my thing.
Yeah, but then would they argue, well, because you've got the catwalk and you've got, like, you've got an enclosed gantry, should you not have a harness on?
Well, I think that's been a very valid point.
Yeah.
But we're not going to wear one of them, are we?
No. No, why am I going to fart about putting that on? That's just right. Clip on here and do this, yeah, and that.
Because you look stupid.
I will look like a right idiot. Yeah, yeah. Look more of an idiot when I fall off.
Exactly.
But you don't ever, yeah, think of that. And 999 times out of 1,000, you'll get away with it and you never have a problem. Yeah. But yeah, it's just that tiny, yeah, little percentage.
I can remember when I was doing, so this is like 25 years ago or whatever, there was a spate. Well, I say a spate, there was probably about 3 or 4 in probably as many months of guys loading, you know, an ordinary bulker, but, you know, loading a load, I don't know, rake mill or something, you know, lightweight,
yeah,
very bulky. There's one instance at the sugar beet factory loading pulp nuts, and where the driver, you know, back in those days, you were allowed on top of the trailer,
yeah,
you know, because you had to physically lift the bloody
sheet over.
Yeah. And I knew three, but there was another one as well. And where the pullover strap broke,
yeah,
and they went all the way from the top of the trailer onto the ground. Serious stuff.
Yeah.
Awful.
Yeah.
Awful. No one died, but bloody hell, they came close.
Cool, yeah, not surprised.
Yeah.
And again, the development from them injuries, mm-hmm, has created a sheet that you can operate from the ground. Because you even have, like, the long pole, don't you, that's,
yeah,
really ungainly. And
yes,
you're trying to get the out of the end in. Oh, God. And you just think, oh, I'll just climb up there because it's just much easier.
Right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. But if you fall over on the ground, you tripped over your laces,
yeah,
you just look silly and it won't really hurt.
That's right.
Might bruise your ego on your backside. But, yeah, if you fall off that catwalk, it's...
it's horrible.
Yeah.
Horrible.
Yeah.
Yes.
Which, and again, it leads on to the electric sheet.
Mm.
But if you've got product that's piled really high, you need to try and flatten it down. And
I know, it's so difficult. Yeah. I haven't loaded pulp out of Bury or anywhere for years, so I don't know how that goes now. I mean, do they flatten it down? Have you done pulp?
I haven't done pulp.
No, nuts, rather.
Oh, I have? No, not for a long, long time.
Or even pulp, actually. Pulp out of Bury can get heaped up.
Yeah,
you
can,
give,
yeah,
it a bit of a knock.
Yeah,
and invariably
just,
it goes,
I think,
down.
From memory, just give it a bit of a shunt,
yeah,
as best you can. I think the times I've had an electric sheet, because pulp is a bit lighter,
yeah,
the sheet just sort of drags through a bit,
yeah,
and just,
yeah,
knocks a bit off the,
yeah,
side.
Yeah, that's right.
Which kind of helps when you get the waivers, because British Sugar, as we know, are so strict. If you're 10 kilos over, you're going back to tip 10 kilos off.
I know. Yeah.
Which, again, that's the right thing to do.
It's the rules, mate.
It's the law.
Very frustrating.
It is very frustrating because you think, well, if I get out, because obviously I only weigh 10 kilos.
Of course.
I'm only a lightweight chap.
That's right.
You know, that'd be bang on there, wouldn't it?
But the downside is, you know, from the haulier's point of view, I mean, I'll admit, you know, whenever I go into Bury, I always make sure that I'm well under.
Yeah.
So I'm buggered if I'm going to go back, yeah, there and tip a bit of Limex off or whatever.
Yeah,
you know,
because it sticks like...
So you're probably going out a tonne underweight.
Yeah.
Half a tonne at least.
Yeah.
you know?
Yeah.
So it's not cost effective.
No, not really.
But yeah, rules is rules.
Rules are rules. These are the rules. That's what we have to abide by.
Yes, yeah. So,
but again, ultimately, these rules are there for our safety and our well-being. That's because we all want to go home at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. And
so then, just as a little aside, I mean, living in Bali, road driving is a completely different ball game,
right,
as you can imagine. But the haulage side of things is atrocious.
Really?
So I've only seen maybe two Arctics.
Right.
And they'd be old, bloody old donkeys, you know, 30-year-old Arctic units.
Well, they'd be Japanese sort of imports or something like that?
Yeah, there's
like Nissans or something.
Yeah, so I can't remember what the big ones are. They're so old, I can't recognise them.
Yeah.
They've got bits hanging off them. And they will take containers to a couple of depots quite near to where I live. But all the rest of the haulage is done on six-wheelers with, I would say, it's a 40-foot bed on a six-wheeler. Seriously. They're just flipping massive. And then the vast majority is done on Capstars and what's the other make? Mitsubishi. So they're seven times. They're seven or eight times. They're not seven and a half. It's one or the other. I can't remember. Atrocious maintenance.
Just non-existent.
Non-existent. Yeah. Overloaded. So they've all got high sides on them.
Yeah.
So they'll be level with the top of the cab, and you'll see them going on with stone and aggregate and soil or whatever, sand, filled to the brim.
Just as much as you can get on.
As much as you can get on. And where I live is on quite a hilly part of the island. And I would say every other day there's a lorry falls over. Seriously.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah.
And if it's not carrying aggregate or whatever, then it'd be carrying, you know, it'd be a diesel lorry.
Yeah.
Or a water bowser.
Yeah.
Or cement mixer.
Yeah.
You know, it is ridiculous.
And they don't learn from it. It just happens.
Just no.
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 No repercussions. No.
So everybody, you know, we all learn when we're behind a lorry or a pickup. They use these little sort of one-ton pickups as well, full control type things, Daihatsus and what have you.
Yeah.
But if you're going up our local hill and there's a lorry in front of you, just stop.
Yeah.
You wait for them to
get out of the way.
Get up there or fall over.
Yeah.
And then you can go up.
Now safe to go.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's awful.
Yeah.
It really is. And just no maintenance, no brakes.
Yeah.
No brakes.
Which is scary when you think about it, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because
there's quite a lot of new stuff around, but, you know, it's offset by the amount of the stuff that we wouldn't even drive around a field here.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, literally stuff hanging off.
Yeah.
Tyres, bald.
Yeah.
They're always getting punctured. So on the main bypasses, like Jill Carriageway, you know, there's always trucks broken down with punctures. And they're mending them themselves. They're fixing it.
Yeah.
They don't have cones over there. You just have a bit of a tree.
Yeah.
You're just getting a bit of tree out of the side of the road,
yeah,
and hang that on the back of your lorry, and that's your
that shows that you've broken down. That's your warning triangle.
That's right. Yes. Very organic.
Try to do that in Germany.
Yeah, exactly.
Got your two warning triangles. Yes. Now I've got a couple of branches.
That's right.
They'll be all right.
Yeah. Have you got any bulbs? Now I've got a fag lighter.
Yeah, that'll do. Yeah. What do I want bulbs for? I can see where I'm going. Right. Yeah. Or everyone else. Well, they don't need to know where I'm going. That'll be fine.
So it's an education over there.
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah.
It is. And it makes me realise that, you know, we're talking about, you know, self safety and looking after each other, and it's definitely lacking.
Yes.
That side of the world.
But I suppose it also makes you think, well, actually, maybe we're kind of doing it right.
Completely.
It's a bit over the top, but...
Yeah. Yeah, we all see rules and regulations as onerous and, you know, pain in the backside and all that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But ultimately, it's to, as you say, you know, to make sure we go home. And
yeah, to protect us, isn't
it?
Like tachographs, you know, when they first came in, there was just uproar, wasn't there?
Yeah.
Do you mean now, you know, limit 2 hours, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. Well, if we didn't have them, it would just be crash's glory, because there are plenty of good operators and people who do think about your safety and things like that, but there's unfortunately still enough out there who couldn't care less and just want you to work until you've fallen asleep.
Exactly.
And it's a funny old industry, because people want to willingly break the law and rules to keep going.
I know.
I've often thought about it as well, with Felix O down the road, Felix O and Harwich, doing like the unaccompanied trailers and stuff like that, and what people used to get up to, like back in the 90s with paper tacos and fuses and so on and so forth. People just running day and night, all week, you know. None of them are in big mansions.
None of them.
They might have made more money at the time, but they've they're either in the ground because they've just died through bad diet, you know, smoking 100 fags and whatnot. Or, you know, they just give up because they've got nowhere. Their boss might have done, but they haven't.
And let's face it, you know, we all say, oh, you know, we're earning whatever a week, but we're doing 2 weeks' work in one.
Yeah.
For that.
Yeah, and it's bad enough now legally doing that with the hours. I know I'm in a bit of an exception at the moment, but generally speaking, like when with the pandemic and all these people, oh, truck drivers earn as much as a lawyer. No, they don't.
No.
It's not even comparable. Plus, we do twice the hours they do. Yeah, and we're still nowhere near. Even if you worked away all week and weekended getting paid for all that, you're still not going to be up there. But that's what the media put out, and people believe it.
Yeah. And a lot of truckers believe it as well.
Yeah, unfortunately, yes. Yeah. But we're here to tell you now,
you will not. You won't.
Definitely not.
You'll bloody kill yourself.
Yes.
So I feel very fortunate in so much as I've been able to not have to drive all year round.
Yes.
But I have done.
Yeah.
You know, that's what I have done.
You're in a position where you don't have to now.
And it's nice.
Yeah.
It's nice.
Yeah.
And now I've got enforced laziness.
Yep.
But at least I'm still here.
Yes, you are, which is a miracle, really. Exceptionally lucky. I don't need to tell you, do I? And just thank goodness for your work colleague as well.
Yeah.
Knowing what to do. It's if there's something to take away from this, it's just please don't bitch and moan about health and safety and PPE. Just accept that things can go wrong.
Yeah.
You don't want it to be happening to yourself or someone you're very close to.
Yeah.
Because when it does, that's when it hits home, and we don't want to be too late.
That's right. And I would add to that, that if you're ever in doubt of how something works, how it operates, don't be frightened to ask.
Yeah.
And if you're not sure, don't do it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Wait until you do know how to do it.
Yeah.
Rather than take the risk.
Yeah.
I think that's quite a major thing. With any sort of equipment we use.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah. We're dealing with big machinery that can cause a lot of damage quite easily.
Yeah,
so
never
be afraid to ask somebody.
No.
Because people will always help as well. And health and safety is there for a reason.
Yeah.
So speak to the health and safety officer if you have to.
Yeah.
Because they'll tell you the right way to do it.
Yeah.
Well, I think that just about rounds our hour up, Frank.
Nice.
So
it's been enjoyable.
It's been
good to have a chat.
Yeah, been very enjoyable. Mm. Just glad you're here after that.
So
just unbelievable. So please take care, everybody, and thank you, Frank.
Thank you.
Much appreciated, and we'll hopefully catch up with you soon.
Okay, well,
cheers, bud.
Cheers, buddy.
Ta-da.
Thank you for tuning in to the Truck and Driver Podcast, proudly sponsored by TomTom. As a special thanks to our listeners for trucking through the holiday season, we're giving away 1 month free of TomTom Go Navigation Truck. Simply download the Go Navigation app and use the code TRUCKYEAH. That's TRUCKYEAH when subscribing. Safe travels, folks.